Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly conversation on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. This week, it's columnist and Albany bureau chief for the New York Daily News, Ken Lovett. In my opinion, the best of the best journalists in Albany. Welcome back, Ken.
Good to be back.
So there are presidential primaries, as we all know. We've just gone through the New York cycle. What do you take away from it?
Well, it was one of the more exciting ones in my time doing this, decades. New York actually mattered. I think, you know, the takeaway was kind of interesting because obviously both Trump and Hillary Clinton won big, but for different reasons. For Hillary Clinton, her big win came because of the establishment. She had a lot of the unions behind her. She had a lot of the major political players behind her.
The congressional delegation, the governor.
Yeah. And the unions had to get out the vote operation. Meanwhile, Trump won because of the anti-establishment, the anger toward the establishment, you know, the same kind of thing we saw with Carl Paladino. So they both won big for totally different reasons.
So what's the takeaway on some of these people? I saw Andrew Cuomo up there, you know, sort of beating his breast after Hillary won. It seemed to be somewhat credit claiming for her win. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I sent out a tweet. Is this him announcing his reelection or his run for president years down the road? Because it was odd. He got up to introduce her at the victory rally, and basically half the speech was about what he accomplished this year and New York accomplished, and then he got to Hillary.
Yeah, well, he has not been their favorite, the Clintons, in that they had him in the cabinet, of course, but then he was a little late to the table endorsing Hillary, I think.
No, he came out the day she announced. He kind of played footsie with Joe Biden for a little while, but he did come out the day she announced. The one they're not too thrilled with is Bill de Blasio.
Yeah.
But, you know, Cuomo played a very high-profile role, especially the last 2 weeks of the campaign. He was traveling with Bill Clinton around the state. Yeah. He was in Albany. He was in Rochester. He was in Buffalo. He was a surrogate after the debate, you know, in Brooklyn. He was in the spin room. So he did a lot of radio and TV interviews. So, you know, no one could accuse him this time around of which is what we all accused him of with Obama 4 years ago. No one could accuse him of not coming, not stepping up to the plate for this one.
Interesting. So I guess I want to ask you, I was up in Plattsburgh, of all places, a great city, and I was talking to the Rotary Club the other day, and somebody raised their hand and said, is Andrew Cuomo going to run for a third term? And without thinking, I said, of course. However, there are some alternatives, and one of the potential alternatives, one of the only ones I can see, is he doesn't run for a third term, particularly if he thinks, you know, whoever the Republican has is going to catch fire, which has happened before, we know that, and he gets a cabinet position. Now, he had a cabinet position as the Secretary of HUD, but that's too lowly for him. The two that he would think of himself, I think, qualified for would be Attorney General or Secretary of State. I think it's almost unthinkable to think that the Clintons would do that. But would they?
I don't see it happening. Secretary of State, you know, one of the jokes around is, as governor, we almost went to war with Canada over the Peace Bridge. If you can go to war with Canada, I'm not sure he's going to be Secretary of State. Attorney General would be an interesting role. It's something he did here in New York. But I'm not sure the Clintons would do it. I'm not sure at this point he would. We'll see. I think, you know, what he's looking at now, if so, you know, you get asked a lot, is he going to run for a third term? And I think my thinking is he's keeping all his options open. If Hillary Clinton or whoever the Democrat is loses the presidential election, I think he may want to run for president. Whether, you know, he gets traction on that, we'll see. But if he were to do that, you know, his term, his second term is up 2018. The next election for president would be 2020. So if he was really serious about running for president, I could see him avoiding a bruising campaign here in New York, going through the third term doldrums, and instead saying, you know what, I'm going to, you know, not run for re-election and then run around the country for 2 years building support for president.
But that would presuppose that Hillary loses.
That's presupposing if Hillary loses. If Hillary wins,
yeah,
I think he runs, because the reality is
Where else
he knows third terms are atrocious. It was bad for his father. It was bad for Pataki, Bloomberg, Koch, all of them. But this is not a man motivated by money. We've seen a lot of people who, you know, wanted to cash out after they left state service. Cuomo is motivated by power. So it's not like he's looking to parlay this into a Wall Street gig. He would like to keep it. So if he's not going to run for president, I think more and more now, because probably about a year ago, I would have questioned it. But now I think more and more that he would seek re-election.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he is going to seek re-election, and I don't think there's any other way out of it, you know, for him, unless the Clintons can give him something.
Something really good. And again, I mean, he's done HUD. You know, from everything I hear, he doesn't want to go back to a cabinet post. But if it was, as you said, a real high-level cabinet post, I'm sure he'd have to consider it.
And certainly he doesn't qualify for the Supreme Court, so that won't happen. Okay, so how come so much of upstate New York voted for Bernie Sanders? I mean, upstate has always been seen as a little bit more conservative, but they voted in huge numbers, as they did for Zephyr Teachout when she ran in the Democratic primary against Cuomo. What is it about upstate?
It's the same model. I think that a lot of the Democrats who are left in upstate are, especially in the smaller communities, tend to be a little more liberal and progressive, and that's what we're seeing. Because don't forget, Hillary Clinton did extremely well among African-Americans, Hispanics, you know, minority communities. So upstate, she did well in Erie County, you know, Buffalo. She did well in the Syracuse area, and she did well in Rochester. She lost pretty much everything else upstate. And, of course, in the city where it's more diverse, she did extremely well. So I think, you know, you're seeing that there is this vocal liberal wing of the party that is upstate. It's just not big enough to have an impact elections. We saw that, you know, with Zephyr Teachout. She got, and granted, nobody knew who she was, but people knew who Bernie Sanders was. You know, she got 60% of the vote almost statewide. I think there is a liberal base of the party, but it's not big enough yet to actually win elections.
I would agree with that. Okay, so now let's go to the state Senate. Tell us about one of the most interesting state Senate elections we have ever seen.
Yeah, we had, you know, this is for the Dean Skelos seat in Long Island in Nassau County. Skelos was the Senate Majority Leader, and he ended up having to step down after he was convicted on federal corruption charges in December. So this was the special election to fill his seat. It's always been Republican, even though it's a Democrat-heavy district. This is for the fight for control of the Senate, and it's odd because the Democrats won. The Democrats up by 780 votes, I think it is, with 100% counted except for the paper ballots. But the Republicans haven't conceded yet. But even if Kaminsky, who's the Democrat, takes his seat, the Democrats will have a numerical majority. They'll have 32 out of 63. The problem is they won't control the chamber. It's such a weird thing, and it's the second time it's happened to them since 2012, where there are more Democrats in the chamber than there are Republicans, but the Republicans still have the power because, one, you have Simcha Felder, who's a senator from Brooklyn who sits with the Republicans and has said yesterday, he told me, his people told me, he will continue to sit with the Republicans. So that means the Democrats will not have the majority for the rest of the year. On top of that, you have five breakaway Democrats, the Independent Democratic Conference, who have aligned themselves with the Republicans. They're very fortunate right now for Simcha Felder, because if Simcha Felder didn't announce that he was going to still be sitting with the Republicans, a lot of people would be asking them, well, how come you're keeping the Democrats from having control of the chamber by still aligning yourself with the Republicans? Now it doesn't matter, because even with those five independent Democrats, the Democrats would only have 31 votes without Felder.
Well, and then when you add all of that up, there will be a number of Democrats sitting there. Can they actually stop any business in the Senate because they have the numbers, but they don't have the control?
It will be difficult. You know, with as long as the Republicans have 32 with Felder, it will be difficult for them to stop. Now, the Democrats are not going to make a huge deal of this for the rest of the session in all likelihood because...
Sure.
It's over, you know, the budget's done. No one expects a ton of stuff to be done by the middle of June when the session ends. There'll be some things, but nothing important. And all eyes are on November, because this year is going to be, again, the fight for control of the Senate. the Democrats are hoping to pick up enough votes that Felder doesn't count anymore.
What about the four traitors?
The Independent Democratic Conference. Yeah. They're hoping what will happen is if they can pick up a couple of seats, the Democrats, that the Independent Democrats will then strike a leadership coalition with them. They would still be their own little conference, but they would be aligned with the Democrats as opposed to the Republicans.
Well, Ken Lovett, correct me if I'm wrong, but we still have a governor, a very powerful Democratic governor. If he tells the five, as you put it, Independent Democrats who have gone over to the other side with the Republicans, if he tells them, you guys get back where you belong with the Democrats, you know, you can still have your little conference, but you gotta side with them in terms of electing leadership and the rest of it, don't they have to?
Yeah, I think they would, and we're going to see what the governor does. Look, we got a little taste. Everyone was wondering, after the Senate Republicans gave the governor's top two priorities this year, the minimum wage hike to $15 and the creation of a statewide paid family leave program, everyone was like, well, will Cuomo help Todd Kominski, the Democrat here in this race in Long Island that just happened last Tuesday? In the end, he did little as possible.
He gave him a little check.
He endorsed Kominski, and he gave him $11,000, but he did not campaign for him. $11.99, the union who works closely with Cuomo, endorsed Chris McGrath, the Republican. So, you know, he did as little as possible so people can't say he did nothing, but it was really next to nothing.
You know, give us a little background on this, because it's so interesting. The public service unions quite frequently endorse Republicans. And back in the days of the great Norman Adler, when he was running his union and the political operation, they decided we're going to side with the Republicans in the Senate and the Democrats in the Assembly. The theory being we can play them off against each other. Everybody has to compete for our goodwill. And it's worked until now. But that's all a matter of gerrymandering. If the gerrymander goes away, right? If they're not allowed to draw, the Senate Republicans aren't allowed to draw their districts for one reason or another, they're done, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's a heavily Democratic state. And, you know, that's the fear. And that's why you saw the Republicans deal on a lot of stuff they would not have otherwise dealt with, because they want to keep power. Now, the unions themselves, to them, it's less important Democrat, Republican. They're attracted to power. So whoever's in power, if the Republican is a governor, they're probably going to give money to that Republican governor. If the Republicans control the Senate and the Democrats control the Assembly, that's who the money is really going to go to, for the most part.
Well, Ken Lovett, let me ask you about something. This New York State Attorney General has opened an investigation into the New York City Board of Elections and over 1,000 complaints on his hotline that there were voting irregularities in Tuesday's primaries. Now, I assume a lot of those came from Bernieites just being frustrated, but is there any truth to this, do you think?
We get this after every election. I mean, and
but not 1,000.
Not 1,000, but I think the Board of Elections in New York City has traditionally been what many people would say inept. They just don't seem to be able to handle these big, you know, these big elections.
And well, people show up and they're told they're not registered.
Yeah. And look, a lot of them may not have been, because the reality is New York is a closed primary system. You had a lot of people this year who probably were entering the system for the first time. And, you know, you have to be a Democrat to vote in the Democratic primary. You have to be a Republican to vote in the Republican primary. So I'm sure a lot of people came in, they're independents, they're registered, so they feel, hey, you know, I'm registered, and they weren't allowed to vote. And I'm sure that frustrated them. So I'm sure that's going to be a lot of it. But not having names on the rolls and this and that, I mean, they need to do something with the New York City Board of Elections, because this isn't a one-off. This is every election we have complaints and problems and machines that don't work, and just seems to be chaos every time there's an election.
Well, certainly I agree with what you just said, but there is a certain naivete among young people about what their entitlements are. I mean, I've talked to a couple of them who decided they were going to vote this year. And when my friend David Gustina said to one young woman, are you registered? She looked at him and said, what?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of like Donald Trump complaining about the delegates. Well, you got to know the rules when you get into the system, and that goes for voters as well.
Well, Ken Lovett, you've used the T word, and so let's go into that. Here's a guy who gets over 60%, right, yeah, of the Republican voters in New York State. What does that mean to you?
It means that he, look, Ted Cruz, you know, killed himself with the New York values. John Kasich didn't have money to compete. And, you know, Donald Trump is from New York. And more importantly, Donald Trump tapped in, and this is what he's done nationally and what we know is going on in New York. He tapped into an angry Republican electorate. And those are the people most inclined to come out and vote these days, an anti-establishment mood. We saw it really with Carl Paladino, the Buffalo businessman, when he ran against Andrew Cuomo in 2010. He beat the establishment candidate in Rick Lazio, a former congressman, but then he couldn't do much more during the general election. Like, those who voted for Trump are likely that's it. I mean, he may have a higher ceiling than Paladino did, but not by much.
But put another way, in terms of what you're saying, there ain't no way that Donald Trump is going to carry New York State against Hillary Clinton.
No, I would not expect, not that I wouldn't expect it, I'd be extremely surprised. The polls have shown that both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders would trounce Trump. And the only one of the Republicans who actually had a chance in New York, oddly, in a general election is John Kasich. But you know, if Trump is the nominee, I would not expect him to carry New York.
Now, you know, we New Yorkers, people who've lived in New York for long periods of time and worked in New York, are salacious. Obviously, the news this week that Sheldon Silver had two mistresses at different points certainly got the headlines, and the tabs won't leave it alone, including yours. Is that just our appetite for salacious gossip?
Partly, but partly there's some real news in there, because you had the assembly speaker using his position, pardon the pun, using his powerful position to help a lobbyist, you know, or to give access to a lobbyist, and also to help get a job for an assemblywoman who he was having an affair with, so according to the court papers. So, I mean, it goes into him, you know, what the federal government went after him for in the first place, which was using his position for personal gain and helping those around him. You know, Shelley Silver pocketed, according to what he was convicted of, $4 million by using his power to leverage private business for his law firm. So he pocketed $4 million, and this is an extension of that. I think it's interesting to me, the rumors about Silver and the affairs, especially with these two women, have been out there for years.
Absolutely.
And you don't prove it, and, you know, that's fine, and it's not illegal. And the rumors or the questions about what did Shelley Silver do for the money at his law firm, and did he do anything for the money? And it's odd that in this court case and this conviction, all our worst fears turned out to be true. The affairs were true, the misusing his position.
The affairs, as you point out, are not illegal.
Right.
What might be illegal is a quid pro quo.
Yes. And look, you know, I mean, one of the people, the lobbyist who he said to have an affair with, now the women deny it, by the way, but the lobbyist who he said to have an affair with certainly worked on high-profile things. She was a very powerful, at one point she was the number two lobbyist, you know, highest paid lobbyist in the state.
Oh, come on, Ken. Oh, you're quite right. Everybody knew that if you wanted something from Shelley, you went to Pat.
Yes, okay. Yes, and the names have been Pat Lynch and the former assemblywoman Janelle Heyer Spencer from Staten Island. So they, you know, Pat Lynch was the second highest paid lobbyist, her firm, in the state for years because of Sheldon Silver. Since Silver left, she's not even in the top 10 anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, there's certainly questions to be asked. So, yes, it is salacious, but under that is some important questions.
So now, Ken Lovett, there is a huge investigation going on by the feds and the city and the state, excuse me, over whether de Blasio has raised money in an unethical fashion.
Which is really embarrassing for the mayor, given he came in as a reformer and wanting campaign finance reform. Some of the stuff that came out, the New York Times reported that the feds are looking at at whether they properly raised money for the Senate Democrats in 2014. And it looks like I had done a series of stories back then how de Blasio and his team were calling people, the unions and some powerful donors, including John Katsimatidis, a Republican who was a supermarket mogul, once considered a run for mayor, that de Blasio approached them, asked them to give money to some upstate Democratic county committees, which normally don't get more than $1,000. All of a sudden, they were getting 100,000 donations.
And we think this is because?
And because that money was quickly turned around and siphoned into the campaigns of four different Senate Democrats who were running at the time. It was the effort to try to win back the Senate from the Republicans. Now, why would they go to the county committee? Because you could circumvent the campaign finance laws. If you were donating to an individual candidate, you can give $10,300. That's it. If you donate to a county committee, it's $103,600. And then they can turn around and give as much money as they want. So what a lot of them were doing was sending all that money, except they kept a little off the top, so to speak.
Yeah, sure.
And they sent most of that money to those candidates.
State Senate candidates.
The state Senate candidates.
But a lot of the sort of...
Who all lost, by the way.
A lot of the big business givers say, I think, that they were unaware that the money was going to go to the Democratic candidates for Senate.
Yeah, Katsimatidis I spoke to yesterday, and he said, I gave $50,000 to this committee. I figured he wanted something up there, but I didn't know it was to help take the Senate back until I got a call from a Senate Democrat thanking me.
Doesn't that sound a little stupid to you? In other words, that a smart guy like that who made all that money in Gristides didn't have any idea, was so naive he didn't know where the money was going?
Although I will say that when I spoke to him back in 2014, Katsimatidis, I reported about the $50,000 donation. He said the mayor approached him at a dinner, the Al Smith dinner down there, and asked him to donate, and he wanted a curry favor. He says, look, I have a lot of business in the city. I was surprised he said it so bluntly, but he basically said, I have a lot of city, and I wanted to curry favor with the mayor, not illegally, not quid, he would say, not quid pro quo, but I wanted him to like me, so to speak.
Yeah, well, that's real interesting. Does Shelley Silver go to jail?
Oh, yeah. The question isn't whether he does. The question is for how long. Prosecutors this week put in and said he should go for at least 14 years.
Oh, my God.
And
he's,
perhaps
he's my
more.
Age. He's in his 70s.
He's 72, I think. And they said at least 14 years, and there would not be against a 20-year or more term.
Oh, brother.
And look, I mean, Silver put in a letter apologizing, saying, he feels bad. He couldn't get into specifics, he said, because of the appeal. But he apologized for bringing shame onto the assembly and to himself and the family. He also said for the first time, I don't think anyone ever knew that, his lawyer said he's older and he has prostate cancer. So please give him a light sentence.
Okay. I ask a lot of people this question, and I always get an emphatic no. Maybe it's me, and maybe it's my guilt feeling. I've known the guy for years. My biggest hero is Preet Bharara. I think he's done more to clean up, Albany politics than anybody. Nevertheless, on some level, I just feel so, what a stupid thing for Silver to have done and endangered himself this way. And I feel bad.
Look, I take no joy in it. I don't take any joy in any of this. I report it hard.
Sure.
But it's sad. You know these people a long time, and it's sad to see. We should point out, by the way, I asked Hillary Clinton recently if she'd reappoint Preet Bharara if she's president, and she wouldn't go there. She wouldn't even compliment him. She just said, U.S. attorneys should go after anyone they should want to go after, but I'm not going to talk about appointments right now.
Except that it's the senior senator of the same party, as the president, who gets to name these things. And I can't believe if Chuck Schumer, for whom Preet used to work, says he's staying, that he's not staying.
We'll see. We will see. She certainly wouldn't talk about it. As he would say, stay tuned.
It's always great to talk to Ken Lovett of the New York Daily News, who has been our guest this week on the Capitol Connection. Ken, thank you, as always, for being with us. We very much appreciate it.
Always good to be here.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of the Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.